Welcome to the regular Fourth Saturday Talk at Nalanda. I'm going to present the short sutras on the perfection of wisdom. The perfection of wisdom is the first part of the second turning of the wheel of Dharma. The primordial teachings of the Mahayana emerged first in the Wisdom Sutras and then in the work of Nagarjuna and others in the Madhyamaka tradition. There are about 40 Prajnaparamita Sutras. I brought a book. This contains the translation of all the shorter sutras, the ones less than 3,000 lines. This is translated by Dr. Kanzi, who was the expert in Prajnaparamita. Translated most of the corpus out of Sanskrit. I think his magnum opus is a large sutra on perfect wisdom, where he takes the 25,000-line sutra and adds certain passages from the 100,000-line sutra that are highly relevant and makes a translation of the large sutra. Then there were various summaries. There was an 18,000-line, a 10,000-line, an 8,000-line sutra. Which was one of the earliest ones. So it expanded from the 8,000 line in the direction of more verbiage, and then it contracted from the 8,000 in the direction of less verbiage. The wisdom contained therein, however, is the same. It's the principle of emptiness, which is a principle of the total interconnectedness of everything. It's that nothing stands alone. Nothing has a self-entity. Nothing is separate from anything else. That's the one of the principles of emptiness. There's also the fact that emptiness precedes all manifestation, but that's getting a little theological in there. So we'll stick to the plan here. We're going to present the short sutras. The largest one of those is called The Questions of Suvikranti Vikramin. It's in seven chapters. And most sutras begin with a question or several questions, and there proceeds a dialogue exploring the answer to those questions. This one has a lot of questions. It starts, because of what does one speak of the perfection of wisdom of the bodhisattvas? How does the bodhisattva, the great being, course in perfect wisdom? And so forth like that. It's similar to the question in the Diamond Sutra, which is the 300-line sutra that's quite well established, in especially in China. The Sanskrit text exists and has been well translated. And the question there was, how does one who is set out in the great vehicle, a bodhisattva in the great vehicle, how does he stand and proceed to along the path of great wisdom? Here the question, how does the bodhisattva, the great being, course in perfect wisdom, is essentially the same. From the introduction I got the blurb, the text restates the doctrines of the perfect wisdom using considerable reasoning power. The reasoning power, however, is a little bit illogical, and that's part of the charm of perfect wisdom. It has a certain exuberant illogic, and it's necessary to look deeply in order to find what the meaning might be, since superficially it comes off often as nonsense. This is in the questions of Vikranti Vikramin. Just as space is immaterial, invisible, non-existence, not totally real, so is this perfection of wisdom immaterial, invisible, non-existence, not totally real. This perfection of wisdom is hard to see, says Sarasvatiputra. The Lord answers, because it does not admit of being seen by anyone. Hard to understand, O Lord, is this perfection of wisdom, because in it no fully real Dharma is apprehended which it has fully known. Indefinable, O Lord, is this perfection of wisdom, because it has not been set up by the definition of any Dharma. This perfection of wisdom has not been set up for the decrease or increase of any Dharma, because it does not review any Dharma which decreases or increases. This perfection of wisdom has not been set up for the transcending of any Dharma, because it does not apprehend any Dharma which it should transcend. This perfection of wisdom has not been set up for the diminution or accumulation of any Dharma, because it does not review any Dharma that would be subject to diminution or accumulation. And so on it goes. Doesn't leave us much logic left. It's like it proceeds to negate one by one all of the preconceived notions that we might have about what wisdom is. So getting past the perplexity, there is definitely transcendent insight that's possible. It's something that you have to work, however. In the Heart Sutra, the other most famous of the shorter texts, 25 lines, it summarizes the entire perfect wisdom, and it reminds us that all the skandhas, that process that we mistake for a personal identity, the process of materiality and feeling reaction to sense perception, recognition, the impulses and karmic formations that cause the psyche to keep in motion, generating various virtuous or non-virtuous states of mind, and finally the dualistic consciousness as the fifth skanda. Those skandhas replace the notion of an I, the notion of a personal being, with an impersonal process. And then the insight of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras that came along was that not only is the personal self empty of any substantial existence, any essential nature, but that the phenomena, the dharmas themselves, are empty of any essential nature. And that being the case, then the Wisdom Sutras enunciate one dharma, one phenomenon after another, and negate its independent existence. It's only in relation to all other dharmas that a phenomena can exist. So that's the crux of the perfection of wisdom. And then there are variations which are extremely fertile for thinking about how to proceed. But the bottom line remains that the method of the perfect wisdom is to take the view that all things are empty, all things are interconnected. There's no thing that you can perceive or think of that is truly separate from any other thing, from every other thing. So that being the case, the Wisdom Sutras romp through that absurd situation with great glee. And it's a little easier to deal with than Nagarjuna's very logical and precise approach to the same material. Nagarjuna progressively negates all preconceived notions you might have about the way reality is, leaving us with the emptiness of interdependence. But the Prajnaparamita covers the same ground a lot more exuberantly and a lot more illogically and joyfully. This 25,000 line sutra, I haven't nearly done justice to it, but it's a good start. You now know it exists. This book of Kanzi's is still available, it's still in print, and it contains translations of all the shorter sutras. And they're extremely varied lot, come to think of it. After the Suvikranti Vikramin questions, that sutra. The next largest one is the Perfection of Wisdom in 700 lines. And in this case, it's a trialogue, a three-way dialogue between Buddha, Manjushri, and Sarasvatiputra expounding unproduced dharmas. The notion being that it might seem that these dharmas exist, but ultimately they're unproduced. They don't arise and they don't cease. From the point of view of the great emptiness, from the point of view of our own perspective, they seem to exist. They're like rainbows in the sky. They don't have substance, but there they are. They're like the reflection of the moon in water. There it is, but it's not substantial. And what the moon itself is open to speculation. We can consider what we need to discover about that. Anyway, one quote in there in the 700 line one goes, "Are then the Buddha Dharmas unsurpassed? They are unsurpassed, O Lord, because in them not even the least Dharma is found or apprehended. The Buddha Dharmas have not surpassed anything." Okay, that's a blatant contradiction, of course, which again the Prajnaparamita exuberantly enunciates in various ways. There's also a pun happening in this passage. Unsurpassed is in Sanskrit anuttara, not nuttara, unsurpassed. And the least dharma is anu. So they're making a pun between anuttara and anu, which means like an atom, a tiny particle. Not the least dharma is found or apprehended in the unsurpassed Prajnaparamita. Then there's a version in 500 lines, and that's extant in Tibetan only. And I'm not sure how Kanzi did the translation of the Tibetan and Chinese ones. He apparently knew Tibetan pretty well. And Chinese he didn't know basically at all, so he must have got some help in translating the Chinese short sutras, but they're all in there. There's a quote from the 500 line one. "The Bodhisattva should, with regard to form and so forth, fully know the emptiness concentration. When, with regard to form and so forth, he has apprehended the emptiness of non-existence, and likewise the emptiness of existence, and the emptiness of essential nature, then that one-pointedness of thought is the emptiness concentration. Likewise, with regard to form and so forth, one should fully know the signless concentration and the wishless concentration." That's a lot to unpack. Form and so forth. That's a list of maybe 30 items. It covers all phenomena, all dharmas. It starts with the five skandhas, goes to the 12 ayatanas and 18 dhatus, the sensory apparatus of sense perception. It goes to the various dharmas of the Buddhist teachings, also known to be empty of essential nature because Buddhism is a construct. Buddha Dharma is a construct, and the perfection of wisdom has been derived in extreme detail as a construct in the emptiness. Form and so forth covers all phenomena. And with regard to that, fully know the emptiness concentration, likewise the signless concentration, likewise the wishless concentration. And those have to do with the nature of our experience of phenomena. Emptiness is also called the object in this case. So there's a bit that they chant up at the Sakya Monastery in Seattle. It goes, "The door to liberation, emptiness, the object. The door to liberation, signlessness, the cause, the door of liberation, wishlessness, the result. This is pretty deep. I'm not sure that I understand it fully. But we have emptiness, signless, and wishless. And the object, the basis, is all known phenomena. They're known to be empty. The apprehension of no sign is one of the features of emptiness. If all entities have what Thich Nhat Hanh called interbeing, they're all interconnected, then there's no sign that separates the one from the other. So they become signless. And once they're signless, then the result is no wishes anymore, no desires. The desires are gone. And that's the result of apprehending emptiness as signlessness. But there's more. Just don't know what. Version in 50 lines. Also rendered from the Tibetan, repeats various stock phrases from the larger sutra. Perfection of wisdom is likened to space because it is absolutely clear. Now, there's a whole lot more in there, as I said, but that gives you a taste of what's in the short sutras, what's in the perfection of wisdom. I'm not going to talk about the Heart Sutra and the Diamond Sutra in any detail here, because this is about the more obscure shorter sutras. I'll talk about the Heart Sutra at a later time. Okay, there's one called a version in a very few words. And that's said to be a counterpart of the Heart Sutra, but it's designed for the foolish common people and not as the Heart Sutra is designed for the spiritually elite. That's why we chant the Heart Sutra a lot. That's why we consider the Heart Sutra a lot, because it is designed for the spiritually elite and we're aspiring in that direction. But the version in a few words, like the Heart Sutra, it contains a mantra, one more difficult than Gate Gate Paragate Parasam Gate Bodhisvaha. But it is designed for more ordinary people. I wonder if I can find that mantra. It goes, homage to the perfection of wisdom, the lovely, the holy. In the Sanskrit for that, Om Namo Bhagavatyai Arya Pranya Paramitayai. Om Di, Hri, Shri, Shruti, Smriti, Mati, Gati, Vijaya, Svaha. And like the Gate mantra, this contains a lot of meaning, so it's more like a dharani. If you pick it apart, Om Di, D is the primary seed syllable of the Bodhisattva Manjushri. Hri means that state of mind where you're extremely conscientious and are dreading both blame and shame. Shri means venerable, so Om Di, Hri, Shri. Shruti means heard, and it refers in Hinduism to all of the sacred scriptures. Those scriptures are said to be heard, you know, not read. They're heard in the mind's ear, so to speak. And then it's followed by Smriti, which means remembered, and that's the name for all the commentaries and explanations of the sutra. So you have Shruti, Smriti, Mati, I think that means intelligence, Gati, that's a path, a going, Vijaya, victory, Svaha, so be it. So Om Di, Hri, Shri, Shruti, Smriti, Mati, Gati, Vijaya, Svaha. That's a good mantra, but it's not the one that I was intending to find. The perfection of wisdom in a few words also, strangely but plausibly, contains the mantra of Shakyamuni. So it goes, homage to the Triple Jewel, homage to Shakyamuni, the Tathagata, the Arhat, the fully enlightened one. Muni, Muni, Ma Muniye Svaha. This we chant a lot in different contexts. But here it is in the Perfection of Wisdom in a few words. And it has Avalokiteshvara in it. And then there's a much more difficult one here. But I'll attempt it. Om Jaya Jaya Padmabe Avame Avame Sarasarani Deity Deity Devata Anupalani Yudat Tarani Parachakra Nivarani Puriya Puriya Bhagavati Sarvasa Mamacha Sarva Satvanancha Sarvakarma Avaranani Vishodaya Buddha Adishtite Svaha. Yeah, that one's a... You'd have to chant that a lot to get it to flow. Okay, we're up to the perfection of wisdom of the five bodhisattvas, which is rather charming. The five bodhisattvas are keyed to the mandala, the directions of the mandala. I think there's time, I'll try reading one. This is kind of long-winded, and it contains again the Shakyamuni mantra. This is the perfection of wisdom for Vajrapani, a key bodhisattva symbolizing the power of Shakyamuni Buddha. So it goes, homage to all Buddhas and bodhisattvas. Thus have I heard at one time the Lord dwelled at Rajagriha. At that time, the Bodhisattva Vajrapani was present in that assembly. He rose from his seat and said to the Lord, how should a Bodhisattva train in the perfection of wisdom? The Lord said, the Bodhisattva Vajrapani should train in the perfect wisdom through the non-production of all dharmas. Furthermore, he should train in perfect wisdom through the fact that all dharmas, form and so forth, are devoid of own being, devoid of signs, devoid of existence, and cannot be apprehended. He should train in perfect wisdom through the emptiness of the subject and so forth, to through the emptiness of non-existence. Those are the 18 emptinesses. The perfection of wisdom, Vajrapani, is the mother of all the Buddhas in the three periods of time. She has been taught as a mantra of great lore, Om Muni Muni Mahamuniye Svaha. Those who take up this perfection of wisdom, they take up the dharmas of the Buddhas in the three periods of time. They acquire a recollection of their previous births. They leave all inauspicious rebirths behind. They obtain a measureless fruit from their merit. They will always and at all times meet with the Buddhas, the Lords, and they will become endowed with the thought of enlightenment. Thus spoke the Lord, the Buddha, Vajrapani, and the whole world with his gods, men, asuras, and gandharvas rejoiced at the teaching of the Lord. So, to become endowed with the thought of enlightenment, that bodhicitta is a deep wish to attain enlightenment, not only for oneself, but for the sake of all beings. And it's something that's absolutely essential in the Mahayana to generate. And at first, of course, we have to fake it a little bit. It's a little bit contrived to say, I will achieve enlightenment in order to save all sentient beings. But as you get into the flow, the reality of that vow becomes to emerge. And then we become, after aspiring to enlightenment with the bodhicitta, we arrive at engaged bodhicitta, and that's where we start doing things in relation to our own liberation and in relation to the liberation of all other beings. And as we continue to engage in that those bodhisattvic actions, then we begin to approach what's called the ultimate bodhicitta. The ultimate bodhicitta is, again, just the emptiness. The ultimate bodhicitta is the reality beyond words, beyond concepts, beyond understanding. That was the perfection of wisdom to Vajrapani, one of the five. Now, what have we got? Kaushika. Kaushika is the name for Indra. Indra is the king of the gods. He's like the Zeus of the Indian pantheon. And Kaushika is a Buddhist that is slowly beginning to understand the Buddha Dharma, but he's slow at it. Kaushika, after all, is an administrator. He's not a saint or a sage, but he does show up at Dharma assemblies, and he's gradually understanding the depth of the good Dharma. This is the meaning of the perfection of wisdom, Kaushika. The perfection of wisdom is self-identical because all dharmas are the same. The perfection of wisdom is deep because all dharmas are deep. The perfection of wisdom is isolated because all dharmas are isolated. The perfection of wisdom is immobile because all dharmas are immobile. The perfection of wisdom is devoid of mental acts because all dharmas are devoid of mental acts. The perfection of wisdom is free from fear because all dharmas are free from fear. The perfection of wisdom is fearless because all dharmas are fearless. And it goes on in that vein for quite a ways. And now this is the one that contains that mantra, Om Di Shri Shri Shruti Smriti Mati Gati Vijaya Svaha. The next of the small sutras is called Nagashri. Nagashri is about Manjushri, and Nagashri is his apprentice, and they're going into town to beg for their food, as they do daily. So in the process of Manjushri and Nagashri going to seek alms, there's an analysis of the emptiness of alms-seeking and of the sameness of good alms and bad alms and indifferent alms. At that moment, Subuddhi and Shariputra awakened from their trance of cessation and went to beg for alms. Subuddhi entered the house of a householder whose wife was a lay sister. She asked him, "Do you still have the perception of seeking for alms? Have you not yet destroyed it?" Subuddhi, "From the very beginning, I've destroyed the perception of seeking for alms." "At the beginning, was it destroyed or not destroyed?" "The future is empty like the past, quite like the original emptiness." So it goes on in that vein. They have quite a dialogue while they're getting their daily bread. Then there's a curious tantric sutra called The Perfection of Wisdom, which explains how benevolent kings may protect their countries. And here we have a extended metaphor. The king is the practitioner. The country to be protected is our own psyches. So the benevolent king protects his own country. It's equivalent to us putting order into our psyche where there's no order, taking care of our psyches in various ways, and hopefully raising them to enlightenment. So that's the protection of the country. And the gloss is that to protect their own country, they need to enhance the Dharma in every way possible. So since he's talking to an actual king of a small country, he's saying, to protect your country, embrace the Dharma, invite the monks for feasts, listen to the Dharma, follow the injunctions of the Dharma, and your country will flourish. And of course, that's true of our metaphorical countries as well. So we need to work on learning the Dharma and then applying the Dharma and practicing it. So that's the benevolent king's And then there are a few more short ones. There's one in 150 lines. Om, free us from all the bonds of evil. Liberate us from all rebirth in the places of woe. Om, thunderbolt of all sacraments, hum tat. So this one is very tantric, as many of the shorter sutras are.
In what way are they tantric?
Oh, well, ordinarily if they have mantras, that's considered tantric. And there are also some tantric keywords that appear in some of the more tantric sutras. So this is tantric because, for instance, they're invoking a whole bunch of beings here. The dialogue is with Vajrapani again, who represents the power of the Buddha, that being a more tantric figure than Chenrezig or Manjushri. So you have love, wisdom, and power. The love is Chenrezig, the wisdom is Manjushri, and the power is Vajrapani. Then there are two parts of sutras. One is called the 108 Names of the Holy Perfection of Wisdom. And I won't list all 108 names. In a way, this is a response to the 108 Names of Tara, which is a devotional list that was made before this one to Perfection of Wisdom was made. So there's a lot of interaction between the different kinds of sutras. This 108 names contains a difficult mantra. I guess it's worth hearing once. Om Pradne Pradne Mahapradne Pradne Vibhasa Pradne Lokakare Ajnana Vidamani Siddhe Susiddhe Siddhamane Bhagavati Sarvanga Sundari Bhakti Vatsale Passarita haste samasvakari tishta tishta kampa kampa chala chala rava rava gacha gacha agacha agacha bhagavati ma vilamba svaha. That's quite a bite. I like that one. A lot of them are very aesthetically pleasing as well as meaningful, but frankly, I don't recognize a lot of the Sanskrit words, so I don't know what it's saying.
It was gone, gone, but then not gone, not gone. Agata, agata.
Gata, gata is gone, gone. Agacha, agacha is arrived, arrived.
Oh, okay.
That's not a not, that's a long A.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Sanskrit's amazing that way. That short A is a negation, but it gets swallowed up in a final vowel, so sometimes you can't tell whether they're saying is or isn't. Mm-hmm. That's why they all require extensive commentary. I mean, people who don't know a text would have a hard time construing it. The custom is you go find somebody that's carrying that text, that deeply understands the meaning of it, and you dialogue with them. And then when you fully understand the text, then you can put it into English. That's how a good translator operates. So it's a matter of locating somebody that's really carrying that text. And the same is true of mantra. A lot of mantras are not activated because nobody's using them. Other mantras are commonly activated because a lot of people are using them. So that's how that works. We're getting to the end of the row here. Ah, yes. The 25 doors to perfection of wisdom. Again, I won't list them. Give you an idea, though. The adamantine thought of enlightenment is the door to perfect wisdom. Holy auspicious conduct is the door to perfect wisdom. The wishing jewel is the door to perfect wisdom. Non-stopping is the door to perfect wisdom. Turning away from birth is the door to perfect wisdom. All consciousnesses are a door to perfect wisdom. The true nature of the great passion is a door to perfect wisdom. The armor of vigor is a door to perfect wisdom. To go everywhere is a door to perfect wisdom. Firm adamantine thought is a door to perfect wisdom. And the Sanskrit is not given in this case, although all those tend to be mantras. And now, there's only one sutra left, and that's the shortest sutra of the lot. It's called The Perfection of Wisdom in One Letter. And it goes like this. The blessed perfection of wisdom, mother of all the Tathagatas, in one letter. Receive, O Ananda, for the benefit of all beings, the perfection of wisdom in one letter. Ah. And that sounds like somebody took it and ran with it and shrunk it down to the minimum. But there's a little bit of profundity in there, too. For one thing, ah is the first letter of the Sanskrit alphabet. And the idea is the ah generates the other letters. All those letters generate the words. The words generate the sutras. So that short ah is the mother of all the sutras, just as the mother of all Buddhas is the perfection of wisdom. So that being the case, the ah represents the wellhead, the origin of the Buddha consciousness, the Buddha nature, even, if you will. There's another wrinkle, too. The ah appears on a blank surface, you know, the empty silk where it's painted on the silk. So you have figure and ground. And the ground, the empty silk that the letter ah is painted on, represents the emptiness that it arises from. So you have a complete idea of the emergence and manifestation from the emptiness. This might be theologically controversial, I'm not sure. I don't keep track of the theology very well. But that makes sense to me anyway, that the empty silk is the ground of being, and the ah is the first manifestation. Then there's another facet of the sutra in one letter, and that's that somewhere in the Mahayana it says that the Buddha really only made one sound, and everybody interpreted that sound as the vast number of sutras that we have. So that being the case, the ah represents that primordial sound that the Buddha uttered and that people construed as speech and understood each in his own language. That's pretty good mythology. Oh yeah, and then I have to mention that there's one text that's even profounder than the Perfect Wisdom Sutra in one letter. And that text was published by Idris Shah. It comes out of the Persian, I believe. And it's just called The Book. And this is a book that was long sought in the Middle East as the exemplar of all teachings and as of the ultimate magical book, and so it was widely sought. Somebody finally found a copy, and they reverently opened it, and every page was blank. So they're talking, again, the ground of being. You know, that's the ultimate secret of the spiritual life, is the ground of being. And the ground of being is what we call the great emptiness. We're going to wrap it up. Because we've covered most of the ground, or as much of the ground as we can cover at this point. I should mention that I'm very grateful to Dr. Kanzi for having opened to us the Perfect Wisdom Sutras. He was a brilliant teacher as well as a brilliant translator, and I feel myself extremely fortunate to have been in his presence and been able to accept his instruction, though at the time I was a pretty dull student and didn't understand anything about what was being really said. But the seeds were planted and they gradually sprout, and there's hope for all of us. Okay. Enough said, I think. Thank you.